Now, a few weeks ago, we had a family Christian club, and one of the things that Mr. Witt opened that up with was what do you believe? And so as I was kind of coming up with topics for what to talk about today, I wanted to do something along the lines of what do you believe? And one of those is really on a topic, you know, I haven't really heard a message on in a long time. And so I just wanted to kind of go through the issue of the meat offered to idols, and what was that issue? And you know, because we've heard that, we've heard people discuss it, we've heard, you know, how it can apply. Some people apply it very broadly, some apply it very narrowly. And so I was just kind of looking at, well, what is the issue? Let's go through that today. What does it mean to us today? And then, you know, also talk about, because one of the phrases that comes out of that is this idea of conscience being your guide, which also is expressed in Romans as well, and it's applied similarly. And so what I wanted to do today was actually go through the whole meat offered to idols issue, see how it applies to us today, and talk about conscience, and is that our guide? Is that, what does Paul mean by that? What is the takeaway we should be using? And so first we'll start, because really on first reading, when you read 1 Corinthians, and this is in, it starts in chapter 8 and goes through chapter 10, you know, you read that maybe Paul is kind of contradicting some decisions made by the council in Jerusalem, and you know, so what is his decision here? So let's quickly just read through the verses here where the first issue of meat offered to idols even comes up, and that's at the council in Acts. So let's turn to Acts 15, and I'm not going to go through the whole history of that, but as we know, in Acts 15 there was a controversy, and we can read that just in verse 1, when it said, "Certain men which came down from Judea taught the brethren and said, except you be circumcised after the manner of Moses, you cannot be saved." And this was clearly a big issue with Gentile members coming into the church. What did they have to do in order to be considered Christian? And, you know, we can go through what the conference is, but let's just turn to what the final kind of outcome of the conference in verse 20, where they said, "But we write unto them that they basically do these things. They abstain from pollution of idols, from fornication, from things strangled, and from blood." And so then this message went out to those speaking out to the Gentiles, So, you know, Judas and Silas, and it says, you know, then it's in verse 27, we says, "We have sent therefore Judas and Silas, who shall tell you the same things by mouth." In verse 29, "that you abstain from meat offered to idols, and from blood, and from things strangled, and from fornication." So abstain from meat offered to idols. Yet now then, when we turn to 1 Corinthians, where this issue comes up, Paul says, 1 Corinthians 8, verse 1, he says, "Now as touching things offered to idols, we know we have all knowledge." And then it's skipping to verse 4, he says, "We know an idol is nothing in the world, and that there is none other God but one." So he's starting to address this issue. And then let's kind of jump all the way a couple of chapters, and I'll talk about this gap later. But then let's, what he says in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 25, where he says, you know, "Whatever meat is sold in the market, eat that." You know, asking no question for conscience sake. And there was a very good likelihood that meat had been offered to an idol at some time. And then we turn to Revelation, where John's writing the letters to the churches, and he says in Revelation 2, verse 14, he says, "But I have a few things against you, because you have there those who hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols. And then in verse 20, he says, notwithstanding, I have a few things against you, because you suffers that woman Jezebel, who called herself a prophetess, to teach and to seduce my servants to commit fornication and to eat things sacrificed to idols. So what's going on here? So actually what I would like to do today, when I looked at this, I would like to make the point, there's a couple of main points here, with what is Paul's letter to the Corinthians really about. Yes, it's about, part of that is about meat offered to idols is one of the issues. But really, what Paul is writing to the Corinthians more than anything about is he is wanting them to make sure they do not go back to idolatry. Meat offered to idols was one of those ways that could happen. And he also gives some principles for how they should basically act towards each other and principles they should use in making decisions for how they should act in the future. It's actually interesting because the meat offered to idols is actually dealing with three separate situations. So it's really not just the meat bought in the market. He's actually dealing with, the first is basically in chapter 8, the question has come up, this is a situation where you're eating a meal in a temple dedicated to an idol. Now this, you know, in most cities at that time, the temple was obviously the center of basically civic life, religious life, everything else. So, people would eat, and if they were a prominent citizen, or if there were a banquet, or awards, or anything like that, they'd be eating here. And a percentage of the Corinthian church basically would say, well, look, this is not a religious act. It's just meat. Why can't we have a meal in a temple? The second situation is more of that more commercial one, where he says it's fine, which is basically buying food in the market and you don't know where it came from. And he basically says, Paul says, eat that, don't worry about it. And then the third is when you're in someone else's home and they specifically tell you, we're dedicating this meal to another god, and should you eat that? And so it's really one of the things that when you kind of look at the Corinthian church and what 1 Corinthians, so much of it is about, it's about a group of people who, yes, they are Christian, but they're very new to the faith. And part of, you know, as we get into the days of unleavened bread, people will go through 1 Corinthians 5. One of the things that the Corinthians really, you know, did was they were very tolerant. And part of their tolerance was they also didn't want to give up too much of their previous lifestyle. You know, in some ways, to be able to say, hey, you know, we can be Christian, but, you know, we don't have to do a lot of the Mosaic law. If my social life and my family life doesn't really change that much, then there's really very little they have to dedicate themselves to. Their life doesn't look a lot different than it did before. So a lot of the argument was not so much the Corinthians were concerned about eating the food in the market. It wasn't, can we eat the idol food? It was more, why can't we eat this? You know, and so you can see how this could have arisen. So let's go through this, and let's start in chapter 8, where Paul addresses the issue. And I like to actually do a pretty full contextual study, basically going through all the chapters, and there's a reason why there is a gap where Paul starts it in chapter 8, and then picks it up again in chapter 10. So starting in chapter 8, Paul actually is dealing with the first situation of eating inside a temple dedicated to an idol, and is that okay to do? And so he says, now as touching things offered unto idols, we know we all have knowledge. And that's interesting. He says, yes, we all know this. We know we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but charity edifies. And if any man thinks he knows anything, he knows nothing that he ought to know. But if any man love God, the same is known of him. As concerning, therefore, the eating of those things that are offered in sacrifice to idols, we know an idol is nothing in the world, and that there is no other God but one. For though there be that are called gods, whether in heaven and earth, as there be gods many and lords many, but to us, There is but one God, the Father, of whom are all things, and we in him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we by him. So what he's saying here is, now we know the idol, we know the meal has no power. So, but he's also saying, too, that knowledge isn't always enough. You know, knowledge can puff up. Charity is edifies. Is our knowledge edifying those around us? And that's where it gets into verse 7, where he says, "Howbeit, there is not in every person that knowledge. For some with conscience of the idol unto this hour eat it as a thing offered to an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled." And the conscience here is truly knowledge. These are people who actually really, the people new to the faith are really coming out of a very idolatrous background. And I don't think we truly appreciate how different that culture was. But what Paul is saying is, there's people who think that's okay. You know, they don't know yet. They don't know yet that they're not really secure in the idea that there is one God, the Father, and one Lord Jesus Christ. And they see you sitting in a temple, eating a meal, may or may not be dedicated to an idol, but you're certainly taking part in this practice. And they can say, well, they can slip back. That's Paul's concern. And Paul concludes, you know, meat commends us not to God, for neither if we eat are we better, or if we eat not are we the worst. But take heed, lest by any means this liberty of yours becomes a stumbling block to them that are weak. And again, the weakness is really truly in knowledge. For if any man sees you who has knowledge, sit at meat in the idol's temple, shall not the conscience of him which is weak be emboldened to eat those things which are offered to idols? And through that your knowledge shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died. So Paul is saying, in this instance, it's really not okay. It's not okay to take part in those activities that give the impression of giving honor to an idol or other god. Now, in the second situation, where he does say in chapter 10, verse 25, where he does say, you know, again, whatsoever sold in the market, eat. Ask no questions for conscience' sake. So Paul has no issue with this. He's saying, you know, you're not called necessarily to be a meat inspector. You're called for a Christian life. So don't worry so much about just the physical food. Yes, we have knowledge. Physical food is physical. But then he makes a case in verse 27 where he says, if any of you, any of them that believe not, bid you to a feast, and you be disposed to go, whatever is set before you, eat, asking no questions for conscience sake. But if any man say to you, this is offered in sacrifice into idols, eat not for his sake that showed it, and for conscience sake. So again, he's saying, okay, the meat itself is not that bad, but again, if someone says, we're dedicating this to an idol, well then you can't do that. And the issue here is really that we're being called to stand up, basically, for our belief in God. And if someone offers you something that is directly against your belief, you're not allowed to do that. And in a lot of ways, like I said, it added to what the Corinthians may have not wanted to hear. Because again, it puts them in a situation where they can't continue with the exact same practices, the exact same social standing or celebrations that they did. You know, they now have to be different. So I kind of wanted to say, just to cover that very briefly, and then what I wanted to do a little was talk about, well, how can we, you know, how can, what does Paul do to kind of build that case? That it's not just, that he's not kind of just coming up with this on his own. Why would we do this? Why would it be okay to eat meat offered to an idol, I mean, meat in the market, but then, you know, either it's wrong or it's not, but then we're kind of putting it on somebody else's actions as to whether, you know, we eat that, it's wrong on our part, but only if, you know, somebody else's kind of belief kind of drives that, which seems a little strange. But Paul's kind of doing that Because what his, again, his whole concern is he doesn't want people new in the faith to slip back into idolatry. And whatever you can do to keep that from happening, you know, make whatever effort you can do to stop that. So one of the principles, and I want to talk a little about this idea about the weak and strong, because Paul talks about, you know, if someone weak sees you do that, then they may slip back. Someone strong, will have a strong conscience, is not going to, you know, they recognize again, you know, your knowledge is strong. But what Paul is concerned is, he says the weak person may be induced to go along with the crowd. So he may be induced to participate in that feast, thinking it's okay to do. But Paul says that, you know, whatever does not proceed from trust is sin. And so the weak, you know, they may not eat idol food out of knowledge or a sense of freedom, but they may eat it because they don't want to get made fun of. They don't want to get ridiculed. And so, you know, Paul's really not saying in Corinth, in to the Corinthians, you know, he says knowledge gives everyone, we have gnosis, we have knowledge, but that knowledge puffs you up. And so you should know that there are people here in the, you know, that you go to church with that, you know, see that behavior and they may think it's okay. You know, he doesn't tell the people eating who have been eating in the temple, he doesn't say, well, just be more discreet about it. You know, you and I know it's okay. He's saying, look, this is actually an activity that is being done that does not honor God. And other people are seeing this, and they're thinking that's okay. And that's a principle we need to use. We don't really come across, you know, idol worship these days. But, you know, we do have activities that take place that are specifically do not honor God. And it is, you know, it is our kind of responsibility to, you know, whether it's uncomfortable or not, to say, you know, we cannot partake in that. You know, I want to just kind of turn briefly to another instance where this idea of conscience comes up, and that's in Romans 14, and it's actually a very different situation. Because in Corinthians, Paul is dealing with food offered to idols, basically idolatry. In Romans, he's really dealing with the interaction between Jewish and Gentile Christians. And so let's turn to Romans just kind of to distinguish a little bit on this idea of conscience. And it's the same word is used, but it actually has a slightly different meaning in Corinthians versus Romans. And in Romans, it's really conscience, the weak is really more someone weak in faith. But let's just turn really quick to Romans 14, just kind of a sidetrack. Where Paul says, him that is weak in the faith receives you, but not to doubtful disputation. For one believes that he may eat all things, another who is weak eats herbs. And so, you know, the issues in Romans really concern kind of meat or vegetables, days of the, you know, days to regard of holy. And, you know, he really never talks about idol food or the context that you're eating it in. It's basically kind of similar believers having an agreement or disagreement on how to observe kind of the same thing, the degree of worship. Whereas Corinthians, it's really Christians versus idolaters. And, you know, idol food in Paul's mind, you know, it's that's intended to be offered to an idol. So that's never clean. And the principle he uses here is he says, you know, the one who eats and the one who abstains in Romans, they both give thanks to God. And that should be the principle we use, because as he says again in Corinthians, he gives kind of that same command to them as well at the end of chapter 10. Oops. Where he says, but he that glories, let him, oops, sorry, that's 2 Corinthians. when he says in chapter 10, verse 31, he says, whether therefore you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. But the contrast he makes in Corinthians is that eating food that you know someone is dedicating to an idol or in an event that is dedicated to an idol, you can't say that's glorifying God. And he makes that clear because he flat out says in verse 20, he says, the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils and not to God. And I would not that you should have fellowship with devils. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. You cannot be partakers of the Lord's table and of the table of devils. So Paul's kind of guiding principle here is that we are called as Christians to be separate. And yes, they've been given additional freedom from some of the sacrificial laws of the Old Testament, but we can't use that knowledge, we can't use that freedom in a way that causes people to stumble. And we also have to realize that freedom doesn't give us every right. And you know what he does is he really builds this argument starting in chapter 8 and in verse 9, and then he fills it in. You know, he addresses the big issue of people eating in a temple, and then he kind of, you know, as you read it, he kind of goes off topic in chapter 9 and 10, and then he comes back to food offers to idols. But he's got a reason for doing that, and it's really the case he's making for why, how do we make decisions on how we're going to live our life, how do we make decisions on making sure that we are not causing others to stumble around us, and that how do we make decisions to make sure that what we are doing does glorify God and makes clear to others that we are not tolerant of idolatry, we're not tolerant of sinful practices or things like that. So what I wanted to do then was kind of go through the context, the whole chapters 8, 9, 10 in order, and just basically run through Paul's argument here on how we, you know, he addresses meat offered to idols, but why does he come to the conclusions he does? So it says, starting in chapter 8, he says, you know, touching things offered to idols, we know we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but charity edifies. And if any man thinks he knows nothing yet as he ought to know. So again, it kind of points out, in 8 verse 1, all of us possess knowledge. But then he also says, you know, the so-called strong among you, the ones who want to eat this food offered to idols, have this knowledge. But you don't know what you ought to know. You don't know how you should be acting around those around you. Then he says, as we know in verse 4, you know, we know an idol is nothing, and that there is no God but one. And in verse 8 where he says, meat commands us not to God, for either if we eat, we're the better, neither if we eat not, are we the worse. So food itself, you know, does not bring us before God. You know, if we don't eat it, we're not lacking, and if we skip it, we're not necessarily excelling. But it's really just the point that, you know, he's basically reproaching them for being under-enlightened. You know, they're not empathetic towards the delicate conscience of the weak, as we say, when it says, you know, in verse 7, you know, some with a weak conscience, you know, someone that does not have that knowledge, you know, would be defiled. So keep reading when he says, so take heed that this liberty of yours becomes a stumbling block to those that are weak. And then in chapter 9, this is where Paul really kind of starts making his case for this. And it basically, he develops an example from his own behavior. And his whole point is, everything he does, you know, he has rights that he could exercise as well, but he doesn't always use those because he wants to win others to the gospel and he wants to avoid anything that might needlessly hinder someone else from coming to the faith. And so in verse 1, we see where he says, you know, am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? If I be not an apostle unto others, yet doubtless I am to you, for the seal of mine apostleship are you to the Lord. So then we keep reading basically all these things where he says, have we not power to lead about a sister or wife as another apostle? And then skipping all the way down, basically Paul's making the case, but essentially in from verse 9 to 12, that he has all these rights. He is an apostle. He has all these rights. But then he says in verse 15, but I have used none of these things. So he has these rights he can't assert, but he's not doing that. Neither have I written these things, that it should be done unto me, for it were better for me to die than any man should make my glorying void. So Paul says, look, in chapter 8, yes, you had a high social status. You know you can eat, you know, meat. You know an idol has no power. You know the meat itself has no spiritual harm to it. And yes, you have rights, but look at me. I'm giving up my own rights too, because I'm not going to assert every single right I have if it's going to offend somebody else. And he says in verse 16, for though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of. For necessity is laid upon me, yet woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. And then again, why does he do all this? In verse 23, he says, and this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partaker thereof with you. And then he gives this athletic analogy. And again, I like to think of it as, you know, at the time, again, at these similar banquets, there were probably prominent athletes of the day invited to that. And Paul brings this example up. He says, look, know you not that they which run in a race run, but one receives the prize, so run that you may obtain. And every man that strives for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they that do it obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainty, so fight I, not as one that beats the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest by any means when I preach to others, I myself should be a castaway. You know, Paul's making the point here that, you know, there are probably athletes that are invited to these banquets as well. But they want to win a prize, so they probably abstain from certain foods and certain drinks and certain items offered. And that's just to win a medal or a wreath around their head. So I think you could give some of that up too, because you want to win another crown, don't you? In verse 10, he then moves in, kind of making this, leading this argument further. He goes, he brings in the whole nation of Israel, where he says, moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers are under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and they were all baptized into Moses and in the cloud and in the sea, and they did all eat the same spiritual meat and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. And this is interesting. He's making the point, look, the nation of Israel was fully separated from Egypt. God actually brought them all out. They actually were no longer part of this culture around them. They actually didn't have to deal with that. But even that example, they fell short. With many of them, God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. In verse 6, now these things are examples to the intent we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted. And it's interesting, in verse 7 is kind of really the only verse he quotes, which is, neither be you idolaters, as some of them were, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. That's quoting Exodus. And again, he's linking this, you know, again, it wasn't eating and drinking that was wrong, but they were eating and drinking in front of an idol. People who had been fully separated out of an Egyptian culture, out of an idolatrous culture, still found a way to fall back into it. You're fully in an idolatrous culture right now. You're in Corinth. Be very careful about your behaviors and practices you do, because you can fall back into that too. And that's Paul's big concern, is don't do those things that will let you fall back into that culture. And then he gives these, you know, examples here. He says, you know, don't expect to do the same things the nation of Israel did and not suffer the same fate they did. You know, don't be an idolater. You know, don't grumble. Don't commit fornication. Don't tempt Christ. All these things happen to them for examples that are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. And verse 12, he ends with, therefore he who stands, take heed lest he fall. That's really the warning he says, because again, it can happen to you, no matter how much knowledge you think you have. And that's, you know, again, the knowledge puffs us up. And he concludes in verse 14, you know, wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. That's his whole point for all of this. Get out of that culture you came from. And then he makes this contrast to the Passover and certainly those meals that the rest of the culture takes part in. And chapter 10, verse 16, where he says, the cup of blessing which we bless, is not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? For we being many are one bread and one body, for we are all partakers of that one bread. Behold, Israel, after the flesh, are not they which eat of the sacrifices partakers of the altars? In verse 19, what say I then, that the idol is anything, or that is suffered in sacrifice to idols anything? And then again in verse 20, just the big contrast. When we're gathered together for Passover, the Lord's Supper, we are, you know, we are one. We are honoring Christ with that. Verse 20, but I say the things with the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils and not to God. And I would not that you should have fellowship with devils. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. You cannot be partakers of the Lord's table and of the tables of devils. And then he again concludes in verse 23, again, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are expedient. All things are lawful for me, but all things edify not. Let no man seek his own, but every man another's. And then basically he goes into the other situations that involving. Now, again, he says, if something's sold, buy it and eat it. Don't worry about it. That's not behavior that's going to lead you back into idolatry. It's those instances that could lead you back into idolatry. It's going to someone's house and indicating that you tolerate idolatry. That's what he's concerned about. So he actually forbids eating meat offered to idols when it's in a context of honoring someone besides God. And that's the principle we should be using, is because, again, we're not going to be in this situation, obviously, that much. I think in today's environment, probably more than anything, we'd be more around the godless versus the idolaters. It's just more, you know, situations, activities, or events set up to just honor something besides God. And then we, you know, or to actively dishonor God at times. And I think we have to be able to take that stand and say, you know, this is not something I can do. You know, so Paul believes basically the biggest thing they have to do as Christians now is they have to basically reject all of what they had, you know, previously lived as. And that really is going to set them apart. That in some ways, that's, you know, when you read the Acts 15 conference, you think, oh, they've got a lot of freedom. But, you know, they are really going to stand apart now if they give up all those practices that look like they condone idolatry or actually are idolatrous in nature in general. So what Paul basically says is when we grow in grace and knowledge, we're going to do that, but we should always understand, number one, the knowledge we have, the rights we have, the freedom we have, it has to be directed towards love and concern for spiritual well-being of other people around us. And again, we live in a world today where we don't want to cause offense, where, you know, all faiths are tolerated, you know, and it can be In a lot of ways, that can be a good thing. But at the same time, we don't want to put ourselves in a situation where, you know, we are seen as accepting, you know, activity that does not honor God. We don't want to be in a situation where, certainly where we are ever participating in an activity that doesn't honor God. But, you know, it's we have to stand out. God calls us to stand out, not just to be different for difference's sake, but to be different in that it shows that we are here to honor God. That is our priority. And so, kind of as we go through this, as we go through the meat offered to idols, you know, I think some have used this to really expand it, I think, a lot beyond just the food we eat and some of the other practices we do. But I look at it as more, you know, Paul's really not so much arguing against meat itself or food itself or changing the food laws. He's really just wanting people to focus first on coming out of idolatry. Honor God in what you do and stay focused on that. And he's fully aware this is, you know, this can be a hardline position and it can, you know, cause some alienation in that group, but that's why we're called. You know, and we are called because we are, you know, God wants us to honor him. We are called to a different life. Now that, and that life, it will be worth it. He tells us, you know, in chapter 10, verse 13, he says, there is no temptation taken you, but such as in common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able. But will with the temptation also make a way to escape that you may be able to bear it. So this is one of the issues I've just kind of been looking up a little before the days of unleavened bread come in. You know, and I think it's just important every now and then to kind of go back to some of the issues we've talked about in the past and you know, especially as the days are coming in, to go back, what do we believe? Well, what, you know, what can we learn from the Bible on what it teaches about some of these topics, and kind of go back through and say, you know, what is the guiding principle here, and can we use that in other parts of our life? And so I hope you know, between now and you know, the holy days, that we can pick some topics that maybe you haven't looked at in a while and kind of go through them, and, you know, as part of your own examination process, but also kind of to secure your own faith and your own knowledge on, you know, well, what do I believe about this? If someone asks me about this, you know, what can I tell them? So meat offered to idols is one I hadn't heard in a while, but I think it is kind of a topic that, number one, I think, in closing, I just kind of want to say, I think it has been applied too broadly in the past, and that some people have kind of said, well, you know, we let conscience just be our guide. And then other times, I think, it can get too literal. People can say, well, you know, it was really just talking about people who had no other choice about the meat they got. But no, it really is a story about, yes, we have to be careful more about the people around us. So it's not so much a what do we eat, what do we not eat, but it's how are we expressing love towards those around us, how are we helping them grow in their spiritual lives, and how are we honoring God in what we do.